Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is here as well. Phil, maybe on Tuesday we were thinking we were going to have a big, happy podcast, but boy, we came back down to earth. I think it was weak in the life of a college basketball fan.
Yeah, I was prepared after Tuesday's game to buy the rights to Queen's Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, and we were just going to play it for the whole podcast. But turns out Providence can stop us, so good thing I didn't spend that money.
Yeah, so even though it's kind of old news now, we are going to look at the big win from Villanova in a little bit, and we're a little bit later in the show. We're going to go through some facts about the Big East and talk about those and talk about Marquette and what it maybe means down the road. But first, Phil, let's just talk the thing most recently in our minds, and that was the sting of the Providence loss. In your mind, how bad was it, a one-point loss on Saturday to Providence, coming off two really big wins against Creighton and Villanova?
In terms of the tournament, I think it was almost negligible. Now, that supposes that we don't go on a bender of losses. But, I mean, it's a game you would have liked to have had, would have made life. Had you won it, life would have been considerably more easy. But I don't think it's anything that is catastrophic by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's more annoying than anything, really, that loss, especially given the big week they had. I would have almost rather they just had kind of been blown out than to have some legitimate shots to win that game and just not able to convert.
Yeah, boy, it was a bummer at the very end because, you know, they came back and they had a shot to win it, and they drew up two ISOs for Kate and Reinhardt, and neither one of them worked out. I didn't necessarily hate Reinhardt taking the shot. I guess I was looking for a little more creativity than two Reinhardt ISOs for the game winner.
I was fine with the first Reinhardt ISO. I mean, that's his game, and it worked against Villanova. They got the matchup. He made the move. He went to the hoop. One could argue that he perhaps may have been inappropriate. No, not inappropriately touched. Had been illegally touched. Well, that doesn't
phrasing.
Work either. Phrasing. But you're not going to get that call in that scenario. It was fine. I mean, he definitely had shooters in the corners that were open that he could have dished to. But I think you're kind of assuming if you're giving the ball to Caton in that kind of situation, he's taking it. I wasn't as thrilled with the 6.5 seconds left when they gave it to Caton to go ISO. I think you were looking for probably more of a Rousey who could pull up for a jumper or, you know, shoot over or, heck, foul somebody out simply by play fake, you know, shot faking them.
Boy, Rousey, I brought this up on Twitter. Rousey is a guy who, if he's on your team, you love him. But
yes.
If he's not on your team, other teams must hate him. They like the old pump fake, get a guy in the air and lean into him. If that's happening against me, I get so tired of it.
Well, and
he's on our team, so I love it.
Right, correct. Well, and the culmination was that 4-point play. That was just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a play we'd be talking about for a long time if they had won that game because I mean, he threw it in with his left hand.
Right, and
as he was falling down, he chucked it with his left hand and got the 4-point play and made it interesting. That was an unbelievable shot. I mean, he really was the MVP of the game with 23 points, and he brought Marquette back. Just unfortunately, wasn't enough, but he played a great game in a frustrating loss.
Well, and that's why I kind of would have liked to have seen Rousey with the ball in his hands for that second out of bounds play to try and win the game. A, because he had been delivering all game, and B, you know, take it away, not kind of be so predictable and have Reinhardt being the one doing the ISO there. But, you know, back to the 4-point play for just a brief moment, you know, Jake Thomas's entire career is built upon the 4-point play against Syracuse, and it was a traditional 4-point play. This was like a circus I don't know how he threw it up with his left hand and did not have his foot touch the ground. Before he released that shot and have it go in, then hit the free throw. That was insane.
Yeah, but, the bummer is the shot didn't fall, so Marquette lost. And what did you take away as maybe what happened to that game? I mean, just watching it, Phil, I was just looking at it thinking, they were ice cold from the floor in the first half. They didn't shoot the ball very well, and they just couldn't get a stop when it mattered. I mean, Cartwright, I just got tired of hearing his name.
Yeah.
It was like that episode of Seinfeld at the Chinese restaurant, and the guy saying, Cartwright, Cartwright. That's what it reminded me of, because I just kept hearing his name, and he just kept scoring. And if he wasn't scoring, he was making plays. The box score says 18 points. I feel like it was about 40, because he seemed like he had so many big plays in that game, whether he was scoring or setting up somebody else.
Yeah, I don't know. In the arena, it felt like everything was a step slow. I don't know if Providence is just a quicker team, if Marquette was tired. Even when they went to zones, which everyone has been clamoring for, and I don't know that it's the cure-all, but, you know, they went to zone a couple of times. And
yeah, I've noticed they've done that a little bit in the past few games. That may be a change from earlier in the season, maybe even a few weeks ago, that they do throw a little bit of zone here and there and give teams different looks?
Yeah, it seems like it, but I don't know. It didn't seem to work. I don't know. It was like Providence was able to get the corner, and if they weren't getting the corner, they were getting good looks. One of the things that was frustrating, and somewhat frustrating, because I was having a debate with the lead Crack Sidewalks Twitter handle before the game. Providence is a good three-point shooting team. That's really what they do well on offense. They're a very good defensive team, but they're a good three-point shooting team. And Marquette's defense seems to be predicated on preventing threes. And that was inherently the problem, is they didn't stop any of the three-point shooters, half of whom would dribble the ball out of bounds if you had any pressure on them. So it just seemed like poor defensive game planning to allow these players, either bad planning or bad execution, that these players were allowed to get clean looks and take open threes. It was the exact opposite of the Villanova game, where Villanova couldn't hit a three. Providence was hitting everything.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, Marquette's defensive rating takes another hit on KenPom if you look at their adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency. Offense is still in the top 10, number 8 in the country. And, you know, that's, of course, points per 100 possessions. So Marquette's at 120.6 per 100 possessions. With their defense, though, is basically right in the middle nationwide. It's 158 out of 330-something teams. And so I guess it sounds okay if you say they're in the middle of the country, but they're certainly not in the middle as far as tournament teams. So, I mean, they're as far as like teams that have a legit shot of sniffing the NCAA tournament. I mean, they're definitely on the low end there. They're just one of those teams that, they can score with anyone, but I think the problem remains is they still can't guard anybody, and I just don't think that's going to change this season. Wojo's, like I mentioned a second ago, has done some tinkering, and you know, maybe throwing in some zone here and there. Maybe it didn't work. Maybe it did. I thought maybe mixing it up against Villanova worked a little bit. But they're never going to be a good defensive team this year. It's just game after game, hoping that the offense outscores what the defense allows.
Well, you know, and do you think, you know, so presumably in the Villanova game, Marquette played better defense. But in retrospect, do you think they played better defense, or to a certain extent just got lucky? You know, is the defensive capability more represented by the Providence game or the Villanova game?
I would say probably the Providence game. I think the Villanova game was probably more of an aberration.
And kind of luck with bad shooting.
Yeah, and they really made their run when Hart went out with foul trouble.
Right.
And when he went to the bench, that's when Marquette really got it close. And then they got it right around the 5-minute mark. They got hot, and then they got to that under 4 timeout. That's when Hart came back in. But, you know, they did mix up their defense, and they got some rebounds when they needed to, but they just hit some big shots. And yeah, I think Villanova did go cold a little bit, but I you have to say some of that may be credit to some Marquette's efforts defensively. But if you're asking who is Marquette as a defense, I think it's what we saw against Providence is what we would probably expect more often than not.
Right. I think it's fair to say, you mentioned the KenPom ratings at 158. Somebody would have to do some research, but I have to think of the teams that are in competition for a tournament spot, and Marquette certainly is. That's got to be probably the worst defensive rating of the teams that are competing.
I don't know. I don't know if it would necessarily be the worst. You'd be surprised how bad some of these defenses are when you look at. Yeah.
Well, UCLA is probably lower now that I think about it.
UCLA actually is pretty. I think UCLA is just a few spots ahead of Marquette. If I'm bringing up, yeah, They're at 125 as we're recording this. So Marquette's still far behind them at 158. But, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are some teams, without stopping the whole podcast and going through them line by line, I'm sure there are some teams that are worse than Marquette that are going to be in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, probably not a whole lot. But, you know, to your point, like, I'm just kind of scanning through looking at some teams that are at or around Marquette. You know, NC State, which I don't think is a tournament team right now, they're a little bit lower than Marquette. DePaul's just a few spots behind Marquette. Pitt is worse than Marquette. Yeah, I mean, I could go line by line, but you get the point. Yeah, I think your point is valid, Phil, that there probably aren't a ton of teams with legitimate shot at large bids with worse defensive ratings on KenPom than Marquette. So Marquette, they are what they are right now. They're just a team that's going to hopefully score a lot of points and hopefully have nights when their shooting is better than others, and they're just going to outshoot their opponents, and that top 10 offense is going to come through and pull them through in a lot of games.
Right. Well, I mean, Providence is a very good defense within the Big East. Big East, I think, top three or top four. And Marquette scored 78 points. That really should have been enough. But apparently they needed 80 because the defense, you know, was kind of leaking like a sieve. But I mean, does the Providence loss, and we'll get to the Villanova, you know, you asked, you know, how important was it, but does it concern you? Does it make you worried about the rest of the season?
Not too much. No, I would be more concerned if we hit a slide after this.
Right.
But I guess my thought was, it's a bummer you lost it, of course, because you were seemingly building some momentum after wins at Creighton and Villanova. And then I posed this question on Twitter, Phil, after the Villanova loss, something to think about now on the podcast. You know, considering we thought we would be 3-5 after 8 games, sitting there at 5-3, what would be a disappointing number of wins in the Big East now?
Right.
Like, before the Big East season began, we were hoping to get 10. And I would say I would almost be a little disappointed with 10. I think 10 is still kind of the expectation for me. But you're looking at the last 10 games where Marquette was at least a slight favorite in about 8 or 9 of them. Yeah, you know, I would want to hopefully see 11 wins. I think 9 wins at this point would be a real disappointment.
Yeah, I think if they end up at 9 wins, that's kind of disastrous considering where they were, right?
Yeah, because that would mean a 4-6 finish in 10 games where, like I said, you're favored in about 8 or 9 of them. And so that was the bummer for me, is that you just let a little bit of your margin of error slip away in game 1 of the last 10. Because we've been talking about the last 10 for a few podcasts here about what Marquette's going to have to do to make the tournament, not knowing that they were going to pull off those two big wins against Creighton and Nova. So I don't think they totally threw away all of their goodwill from beating Creighton and Villanova. But I think you lost just a little bit.
Right.
So now if you want to get to that magic 10 win total, now you've got to go 5-4 in these last 9 games, as you know, as opposed to, you know, so going 4-5, which
right,
you know, would be a bummer. So I'm just a little bummed that, you know, like I said, that margin of error just shrunk just a little bit as far as what you have to do to be a tournament team. And for what it's worth, as we're recording this on Sunday, ESPN's Joe Lunardi had Marquette number 29 in his seed ranking. So that's an 8 seed. So that's still fairly comfortably in for the moment.
Yeah, I think that's – well, and I mean, there's a little bit of – I mean, Creighton went, you know, which was a great win at the time, but, you know, first game without Watson, and then Creighton turned around and lost to Georgetown, who is – to describe them as middle of the pack for the Big East is potentially generous.
Yeah, although Georgetown may be waking up. I mean, they beat Creighton, and then they beat Butler
right
on Saturday. So – Georgetown may be finally waking up, but then again, they could turn around and lose to DePaul on Tuesday too. So I'm not going to toot their horn
right
too much just yet. But
right, but the point remains is that I mean, thank God Creighton went on to beat DePaul on Saturday. But you know that potentially not only does Marquette lose on the Providence game, which erodes it a little bit, but then if Creighton takes a step back, then in retrospect, that Creighton win doesn't look as great. And then so maybe somebody says, oh, the Villanova game was just a one-off aberration kind of thing. And lucky for Marquette, Villanova rallied to beat Virginia today at home. Because otherwise that would
I still think Villanova is going to be one of my picks to go to the Final Four, no matter where they end up.
Oh, I agree.
I still think they're an elite team offensively and defensively, and I think they're just going to be so tough to beat. And they really showed their mettle coming back to beat Virginia on Sunday. So I still love that team. Like, I honestly, I think I cheer for Villanova to win every time they play, other than when they play Marquette.
I agree with that. I mean, they were classy. I thought Jay Wright had some tweet, at least one tweet after the Marquette game that was super classy. Yep. You know, I have great respect for that team. I know there was a debate on Twitter as well. Not that this needs to be the all Twitter podcast, but around what teams you hate in the Big East. And Villanova is far, like, I find them to be a rival. I want to beat them, but I have zero reason to hate them or to get angry about them. They're like the anti-Wisconsin in my book from a rivalry standpoint.
Yeah, I honestly think I cheer for them to win every time they play. Maybe me being from Kansas City, maybe I would cheer for Kansas if Kansas played Villanova. But other than that, I think I would pull for Villanova against pretty much anyone.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So, which was why it was so awesome to beat them.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah,
and you know, we'll just touch on that win again. It's kind of old news now, but it what a monumental win that was for Marquette. We thought about doing a podcast midweek just to celebrate it, but the scheduling didn't work out. But I loss from Providence aside, not going to really take away anything from that win on Tuesday night against Villanova. Best win in the Wojo era, easily. Marquette's second ever win over the number one team in the country, first ever in the regular season, the other one, of course, being the win over Kentucky in the Elite Eight back in 2003. The team just played, honestly, as well as they could possibly play on both ends, and they showed a lot of heart, just fighting all the way down to the final buzzer. I mean, Caden Reinhart, maybe certainly his best game as a Golden Eagle, maybe of his whole college career.
Right.
He hit some big shots, and I was so happy for so many guys. Like, Dwayne Wilson had a great game. He had a big three in that hesitation blow-by when he got that big shot that really got the crowd on its feet. There was just so much to love about that game, and I certainly won't forget it.
Yeah, well, and I will say, having attended the game, it was one of those things where the crowd has been somewhat disappointed. You know, they seem restless during the games. It's like they're anticipating them being great, and then when they're not super great all the time, they're kind of sitting on their hands. They kind of got roaring in the first half when Rousey had that heat check three, the dribble up and heat check three to make it, I think it was 24-23. The crowd was rocking and rolling. I will say some of the officiating in that Villanova game, and even in the Providence game, was just downright baffling stupid. In the Providence game, there was at least one play where number 44 from Providence literally shoved Matt Helt out of bounds on a rebound, and there was no call.
Paint Touch has tweeted about four or five just atrocious calls.
Right.
From
Providence. And then the other one, the last bucket that Providence made, the guy clearly was out of bounds when he caught the ball and no call. But neither here nor there. But the Villanova game, the crowd, about the seven-minute mark in the second half, the crowd really, you know, and I'm not saying the crowd started the rally. I think the players definitely started the rally. But when Marquette got it down to, like, 9 or 10, maybe 11, and kind of kept going in, the crowd started to warm up. And then they took a real step back when they missed six free throws in a row, including four by Fisher. Crowd got a little frustrated. And then they really – it was the loudest I had heard with 2 minutes to go and Wilson's blow-by hesitation, which was just beautiful. You kind of want to see that more from him. But the crowd was just—it was the loudest I had heard the Bradley Center in probably 10 years.
Yeah, you know, funny story about that game. I had to work on Tuesday night, so I actually didn't get to watch the game live. So I recorded it, and I do something I rarely do anymore, and that is record the game and try and avoid finding out what happened.
The patented cone of silence.
Yeah, that's something you and I always call the cone of silence, where we just, you know, basically go dark, no Twitter, no, you know, don't use my cell phone, don't answer tweets or texts or don't answer the phone or anything. But so I had to shoot a high school basketball game, and I decided to record the game just because it was a huge game. I just wanted to experience it and not just like follow the score, which is what I would normally do. Just kind of follow what the score is, and then I'd maybe decide if I want to watch it when I get home or not. I just decided I wanted to experience it live like everybody else did. So I went into the cone of silence. I didn't respond to any text or anything. I asked you, Phil, to text me just if Marquette got blown out, then I wasn't going to watch it because I wasn't going to stay up late and watch them get killed. But so I'm watching the game, and it's going about the way I thought it would. Villanova up double digits. I'm like, well, Villanova's better. And I get into the second half, and I'm like, well, they're up, what, 17?
Yep.
But I said, well, Phil didn't text me, so maybe it got exciting towards the end. So I just kept watching. I'm like, well, this is interesting. And we get towards the, like, five-minute mark, and I'm like, well, crowd's getting loud. I guess I'm glad I stayed up to watch this. We'll see how it goes. And then they got it to three. I'm like, holy crap, are you telling me that we got to within three? And then they tied it. I'm like, oh my gosh, they got it tied? And so now all of a sudden it's like, I don't know, about 11:30 at night. And I'm on the edge of my seat while everyone else is probably still reveling in the victory.
Face down at Caffrey's.
I want to, like, talk to somebody about this, but I'm the only one I can talk to. And so, then I, saw how they won and everything. Then I immediately got on Twitter and started reacting with everyone. And while I had planned on being in bed by about 11:30 that night after watching a loss on DVR, I stayed up till, like, 1:30 in the morning watching people's reviews, reading articles by whoever wrote it, whether it was Matt Velasquez, Paint Touches, Anonymous Eagle, and seeing everybody's pictures and YouTube videos and students rushing the floor, which I love. Every student should get the chance to rush the floor after a legitimate, huge win. Or, rush the field at football schools. But everyone should get that experience once of just rushing the floor with celebrating with the team. I just loved everything about it. So it was just funny that I had to experience it about 2.5 hours after all of you did, but I got to experience just the ups and downs of that game, and it was great. And it was certainly one of the most memorable Marquette games in the last decade.
Yeah, for sure. And it's certainly probably the greatest regular season win and the greatest, just regardless of it being a number one team, the comeback and all the drama. The one last thing I will say about the fan base, and I talked about it a little bit on Twitter, but again, I've been a little down on the fan base. This team is exciting. I get that there's frustration. I get that it's been a long road to kind of come back over the last 3 or 4 years from where we were. But this offense is exciting. This team needs support. And, and Wojo's kind of been harping on that a little bit, like, hey, come support us. I kind of felt like that win, as unexpected as it was and as awesome and as emotional as it was, I kind of, this is a 20-year-old movie now, so I feel weird saying spoiler alert, but at the end of Saving Private Ryan, when Tom Hanks' character gets shot and says to Private Ryan, to Matt Damon, says, earn this, I kind of feel like that's what Wojo should be saying in the post-game press conference to the fan base. Hey, guys, you probably haven't done enough to earn this win, but hey, let's earn it going forward. Let's get really excited. And they responded for the Providence game. The crowd was great for the Providence game, even though that was frustrating.
Yeah, and I hope like as I've said before, to get 18,000 to Bradley Center, you need the bandwagon fans to fill it up. Marquette does not have 18,000 passionate fans in Milwaukee who will show up for every single game. So if you want to fill it up to the corners, as Al McGuire used to say, you need those bandwagon fans, and I hope the bandwagon fans aren't back off it after the Providence loss. I hope they come back. The next home game will be February 7th against Butler. I hope they pack the place for that one, and then for the next big home game, which will be after that, which would be National Marquette Day on February 18th. I hope the fans keep coming back. I have no doubt about the diehard fans because they're there in the season ticket holders. They're there every game regardless. But to fill the corners, we need the casual fans. And I hope they keep coming back. And I hope they enjoyed what they saw, win or lose, whether they're at the win or the loss on Tuesday or Saturday, from this team, and say that they are exciting and that they are a lot of fun to watch.
Well, critical to that is not losing to St. John's or DePaul.
Yes, please God. Oh. As we say the Providence loss was not catastrophic, losing either game this week would be.
Yes.
If you want, I know, respect your opponents, tough to win on the road, totally get all that. If you want to be a tournament team, you got to win these two games.
Yes.
And that's really all there is to it. Because if you lose either one of these games, then you're back on the bad side of the bubble, I think.
Yep.
I would say you out for the time being if you lose one of these games. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. But just win these two games. I mean, like I said, you need 5 wins down the stretch to get to 10. 3 of them are against St. John's or DePaul.
I would say, especially in combination with the Providence loss, if you certainly DePaul, probably St. John's, if you lost one of those two games, that is as bad as the Villanova win was good. Completely wipe out that Villanova win.
Yeah, you've erased all your goodwill there. You're back to where we were after the Butler loss, I think, as far as...
Well, yeah, and people probably look, that gives them the opportunity to say, oh, that Villanova win was just because Villanova was off Marquette. You know, Marquette caught a lucky break there. And then you're really, you know, we're at the last 9 games now. The last 9 games, you gotta win probably more than you lose to make sure we get in.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think St. John's has been playing a little better lately. I mean, they hung with Xavier on Sunday. They ended up losing. I mean, they went toe-to-toe with Providence before that. I mean, they beat Providence before that. They've been in a few games, but still, man for man, Marquette's a better team than St. John's. You got to go to New York, and you got to win that one on Wednesday. And then, I know DePaul's a house of horrors where we go down there, and Marquette plays terrible at DePaul every time.
Yep.
But you just can't do it this time. I mean, DePaul is, I mean, they're the worst team in the Big East. That's a horrible loss on your resume. Just can't afford it. So take care of business this week. And then we could talk about the final 9 games after that. For that would be 7 down to 7 games after those two. But just important to refocus, and maybe the Providence loss will cause them to refocus a little bit. And you know they'll have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday to get ready for St. John's. I think I am confident that the team's going to bounce back. They're going to beat St. John's, they'll beat DePaul, and then we can kind of refocus and get back on, you know, they still are on track to be a tournament team, but I would be extremely disappointed in a letdown this week with losing to either one of those two teams.
Oh, I completely agree. That would be bananas.
So, hey, you know, going forward, Phil, I had an idea to maybe shake up the show a little bit this week with a little segment. And I know there's a lot going on in the world today that have people riled up, and we're not a political podcast by any means, but we try to talk basketball and maybe have a little fun and make you laugh a little bit. So I came up with this segment, Phil. It's called Fact or Alternative Fact.
Yay!
I'm going to hit you with a few statements about Marquette in the Big East, and you will tell me if this statement is a fact or an alternative fact, and then we'll kind of talk about each of them for a little bit. Good to go?
I think I understand the rules.
Okay. First one is this. In Marquette's last 9 games, they will get 6 wins. Fact or alternative fact?
I believe that is actually a fact.
Where do you see the 6 wins?
St. John's twice, DePaul once, Butler at home, at Georgetown, and then either Xavier at home or Creighton at home.
I tend to agree. I think they can get 6 wins in the last 9. I was really optimistic for 6 before what happened on Saturday, but I still think they can get 6. Like I said, 2 with St. John's and 1 with DePaul, so that's 3. You just got to find 3 more, and maybe you can get a split with Xavier. I mean, hopefully, you know, Edmund Sumner isn't out indefinitely, but he did have a knee injury in the St. John's game. We'll see what the diagnosis is there. But you get Butler at home, you get Creighton at home, Georgetown, who has maybe woken up a little bit, but I still think Marquette might be just a little bit better than them. I think they can get 6 wins, so I'm kind of leaning fact on that one as well. All right, here's the next one, Phil. Marcus Howard is the Big East Freshman of the Year.
I think that's alternative fact.
Is it down? It's down to 2 guys, isn't it? Though it's him or Justin Patton.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being Patton, one because Creighton's offense is just going to require him more with Watson being gone, and 2, and maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's just 2 rough games, but in both the Villanova and the Providence game, well, I mean, Howard was pretty good in the decent in the Providence game, but but he struggled in the Villanova game. I think the scouting report is out on Marcus a little bit. I think they extend their defense against him, put a longer player on him, don't let him get the airspace to shoot. So I think he may level off or trend down a little bit. That'll allow Patton to take the number one spot.
I think it's going to be. I think it's going to come all the way down to the end, and if you know, if Howard can, he's had a he had a tough couple games. He had a tough game against Villanova, of course, but you know, if he could lead Marquette to six wins, like we talked about previously, if he could be have a big role, I think it'd be really close. And who knows, there may be co-Big East Freshmen of the Year. I'm going to bounce off it based on your last answer. I probably know your answer to the next one, but I'll just throw it out there anyway. Phil, Marcus Howard is going to be a national freshman All-American.
Yeah, so I think I have to go alternative fact.
I'll say first.
Yeah. Now, which one do you think? Do you think it's fact or alternative fact?
I would say alternative fact for freshman. Just because there are just so many one-and-dones this year that are so highly regarded, I think they're going to steal a bit of his thunder. But even if, say, he continues to play as well as he has, he's going to have a good case. Like, Marquette put together a nice little campaign last year for Henry Ellenson to be a freshman All-American. It didn't quite work out, but I think they maybe should think about a similar one for Marcus, though.
If
he could pick up, he's got a couple tough games, but he is right there. But I know there's so many freshmen nationwide that have been so good and are projected lottery picks. Lonzo Ball, Markel Fultz, the Jackson kid at Kansas is great. Patton, of course. Duke's got like three or four who haven't performed well, but I think Jason Tatum's really good. So I just think there would probably be too many guys ahead of him for him to get freshman All-American. But he was building a very good case, though, until this past week where he went a little quiet. But
well, in the mix. I mean, if our first question response of being facts, if they win six out of their last nine, you would have to think in a fair majority of those games, Howard is turning in, you know, an above average to excellent performance for Marquette to be successful in those games and get that kind of record. So maybe he gets there, but I think he'd have to be like stellar the last nine games to get visibility. Yeah. Like some of the other programs would. It's just Marquette's not in the same level as those blue bloods where they naturally get that kind of visibility.
Yeah. And then you got a guy like Markel Fultz, who, similar to Ben Simmons last year, is killing it for a bad team.
Yep.
That probably won't even sniff the postseason. Like, Fultz is doing all he can. It might be the number one overall pick, but I think, you know, he would get it. He's one of many guys. Lonzo Ball would probably be my pick for National Freshman of the Year right now. But, yes, I think it's going to be tough. But I think it's an interesting discussion, and especially if Marcus heats up down the stretch. I think Marquette should have a campaign for him, even if it fails. I think he would be very close.
Can he campaign at age 17? Don't you have to be 18 to do that?
Well, he can't vote.
Drink.
All right, so our next factor, alternative fact. The Big East this year is the best it's been since the Big East was reformed.
I'm actually going to go with fact on that one. That one's tough because I think, quite frankly, the Big East, since it's been reconstituted, has been great.
It has every year, and I think it's close too.
Yeah, but I think it's fact. I think this is the best Big East. You know, with Villanova the number one overall team. And I would say it was clearly fact before the Watson loss at Creighton. But yeah, I think this is the best top to bottom the league has been, because there's really only two teams that generally suck in this league.
Yeah, and they play in New York and Chicago, but the two biggest markets. But I've stopped short of saying they are, so I'm going alternative fact on this one, just because I think in past year, obviously, you know, Villanova won the national title last year, but I think, like, say last year, the Big East had two legit national championship contenders with Villanova and Xavier. And Xavier obviously fell short in the tournament and didn't get as far. But I think there have been other years where, say, Villanova was a national championship quality team, but they just lost so stinking early, and they just had that reputation of being early round chokers, even though they were a great team. And they had, like, the year we had McDermott in the first year. I think there have been years where maybe the Big East, but not significantly better, though. I think this is maybe, who knows, maybe if you go 1-8, this is as good as it's been. But I don't know. I think I stopped just short of saying this is the absolute best it's been. But I don't want to suggest that it's going down by any stretch. I just think maybe, like, say, last year, where you had Villanova as national champs and Xavier, who was good enough to be the national champs, maybe just a tad better.
Well, I mean, I guess I would say if Watson was still on Creighton, I think you would have the exact same scenario, right?
Yeah, that's a reason why I should clarify. That's one reason why I would say this year's just a little short, because I think Watson being gone knocks Creighton out of the Final Four contenders for me. I'm not sure what's going on with Xavier, and I'm not sure Butler is quite – I think Butler's very good, a team that can make a run, but I wouldn't say they're quite on Villanova's level.
So, and we got, what, five or six teams last year?
We had
in the tournament.
Five.
So I think I even though, you know, we kind of disagree whether it's fact or alternative fact, but it's close. So I think it's reasonable to assume five is the max this season, mm-hmm. right?
I think you can get six this year.
Well, yeah, the bubble's not very great this year.
Yeah. Last year the Big East did have five. It was Nova, Xavier, Seton Hall, Butler, Providence. So I think you can get a six in there where, you know, obviously with the top four we've been talking about all year with Nova, Creighton, Butler, Xavier, and then Marquette. And then now it was Seton Hall was slightly ahead of Marquette, but they've maybe hit a bit of a lull here. But I still think Seton Hall's right in that mix. So it'll be close, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, speaking of the top team in the conference, my next fact or alternative fact for you. All right. The loss for Villanova in Milwaukee on Tuesday will be Villanova's last loss of the regular season.
That one's a tough one, because if you say Villanova lost, we got the really hard one out of the way because they played Virginia today.
Exactly.
But I think it is their last loss. I think that's a fact. Looking at their schedule, they don't have any tough games that are tougher than what they've already played.
Yeah, I think it's a fact too. I think Villanova is one of the absolute best teams in the country, despite the upset loss to Marquette, going to taking down Virginia. That was a home game, but beating Virginia on Sunday just kind of reaffirmed what we all thought Villanova is: a truly elite team, a national championship contender. Their toughest games left. They have Creighton and Butler both at home. I mean, their toughest road games left. They still have to go to Xavier. They have to go to Providence. I mean, they have two games with Georgetown left. I think it is Villanova's last loss of the regular season, so I'm going fact on that one. I don't think they'll lose again in the regular season. Maybe strange things happen in conference tournaments. They might lose a game there, and then we'll see what happens in the NCAAs. All right, so this is my last fact or alternative fact for you, and this is the big one. Marquette is an NCAA tournament team.
It's fact. I mean, even if I ignore the 6-9 question, or the winning 6 out of 9, I think they've done enough, and they are good enough with what they have left on the schedule that they should get to a minimum of 10 wins. So they only have to win 5 out of 9 going forward. I think it's a fact.
For this purpose of this exercise, I'm saying fact as well. I fully expect them to get to 10 wins, put it that way. I would be extremely disappointed if they didn't, because that would mean a 4-6 finish, which against this schedule where, like as I said earlier, they would be favored in most of the games, about 8 of them. As we're recording this on Sunday night, Marquette is at least a slight favorite in 7 of the final 9 games. Basically Georgetown's a toss-up. They have that one as a loss currently, and then they are pretty significant underdog, 6-point dog at Xavier. And then they have a few other games. Xavier at home is a toss-up. Creighton at home is a toss-up. But I think they're going to get to 10 wins. I think 10 wins is enough. Like I said, the fact that where they are right now, you know, Lunardi has them in the top 30 on his seed line. Yeah, I think it would be a very disappointing collapse for them to not be a tournament team, because that means you would have at least a couple terrible losses down the stretch, at least one or two. Yeah, I mean, St. John's or DePaul. Losing to Georgetown would be a bummer, but I don't think it would be catastrophic. I think you could afford to lose that one right now. Don't want to lose it, of course. But, yeah, I think Marquette's a tournament team. I think they're going to get in. I think they're going to do enough down the stretch, because I just have enough faith in the Marquette offense that they will get enough wins down the stretch to get in.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and this may sound silly, but assume they win St. John's and DePaul this week. Just, you know, that leaves 7 games on the schedule. They got to get 3 wins out of that. You would think, again, if they are good enough to be a tournament team, they're going to win at least 3 out of those games. There's no team on paper that is clearly better than them. There are teams that
Yeah, there's
would
no game. Yeah.
suggest they're better, but nothing that, like the Villanova Marquette mismatch. I mean, Villanova is a better team. There's just no question about that. You play
Yeah,
that game,
bucket.
9 times out of 10, Villanova is going to win it.
Exactly. And there's no game left on the schedule where I say, there's no way Marquette wins. I think there's a reason to believe they could win them all. Will they win them all? Of course not. Just asking for 5 wins down the stretch. I think they get those 5 wins. I think maybe even 6. Maybe I'll get greedy and say 7. Ask me again in a couple weeks. But that's where I think we are. Hey, by the way, speaking of facts or alternative facts, we had that trivia question last week about the All-Star, NBA
Yes,
All-Star
that was
game.
a deep trivia question and a very good one.
But I do need to update it because we said only one college was ahead of Marquette, and that's Wake Forest. But that was assuming Chris Paul would make the All-Star team,
Which he did not.
which he was not selected. So as we currently stand, no college has a longer active streak of NBA All-Stars than Marquette does, having at least one All-Star every year since 2005, because Wade made it 2005 to 2016, and then Butler's been in the last two. So there you go.
Hey, that and combined with an upset of Villanova, pretty good week.
Good stuff. Marquette, we produce NBA All-Stars. Hopefully more down the road. Hey, before we get out of here today, we do have one recruiting note that we want to touch on. I saw Corey Evans reported on Twitter that Greg Elliott, we've mentioned him before on the podcast. He is a 6'4 shooting guard out of Detroit. He is going to take an official visit to Marquette on National Marquette Day, which is February 18th. So things kind of heating up between Marquette and Greg Elliott. Now, other schools are starting to get in the mix. Apparently, Michigan State has now offered. So, more than recruiting rankings, Phil, if Tom Izzo wants this guy, then I'm more interested now than I was before. If
Correct.
he's good enough to play for Tom Izzo, he is certainly good enough to play for Marquette. So, I'm interested. I'm curious how like Wojo came across this guy because, like I said, he's not very highly rated. He's not I don't know if there's much buzz around him, but obviously, this coaching staff came across him late somehow. So, he'll be something interesting to follow over the next few weeks. Marquette has two scholarships to play with for next year, as the scholarship table certainly currently stands. So, maybe a late bloomer that Wojo and Stan and the guys have found out of Michigan.
Well, and you would think that if Marquette got in there early ahead of Michigan State, I mean, there's some advantage in that. Who knows?
Yeah,
It doesn't really mean anything, but.
Not necessarily, but I do find sometimes that, being that first big school to offer, can last with a kid. Obviously the first school to offer doesn't always get them, but establishing the relationship early, I mean that can play in your favor. Just looking at some of his other reported offers according to Scout, it looks like DePaul, Temple, Kent State, Rice have offered. So, and Michigan State's jumped in and now Marquette, of course. So Marquette's in the mix with him, and who knows the way the scholarships shake out for next year, assuming everyone's coming back. I don't know how much playing time he would get as a freshman, but this would be certainly some needed backcourt depth after Dwayne Wilson and Andrew Rousey graduate after next year.
Right. Well, and I mean, we know 2 years out we need some depth and some talent at the guard spot. So, that plays into some of the recruiting, especially if he's kind of an under the radar recruit that may indicate he needs some time to develop and get his body ready for the college level and those sorts of things. So, maybe there's some appeal there, but it's clear that Wojo does not have, unlike with the first three scholarships we had for next season where we were hammering away at the front line, I think he's looking for, at this point with the two last scholarships, he's looking for fit and long-term need as opposed to plugging any holes for next season. I think he's done that enough.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Marquette does from there on out because, I was thinking about the 2018 class where Marquette is in contact with quite a few big names. As the scholarship table currently stands, Marquette would really only have one scholarship to give, assuming if they were to fill both of the current remaining ones. The only guys graduating next year would be Dwayne Wilson and Andrew Rousey, and then one of those scholarships is taken up by Brennan Bailey, who will be back from his 2-year mission. He was in the class with Howard and Hauser, but he committed last year, but he's on a he's on a 2-year Mormon mission this year and next year. So in 2018, he would take one of those scholarships left vacated by a graduating Wilson and Rousey. So it wouldn't surprise me if Elliott gets on board, if that last scholarship is either banked for next year or used on a grad transfer, meaning
right.
then it would become open. So, of course, you never stop recruiting. You always, if you think somebody's going to help you, you bring them in. But I wouldn't say there's much urgency to use that last scholarship, though. If Elliott commits, Wojo's not going to give it away just to give it away. So,
well, and he's got to start balancing the classes, right? I mean, he's bringing in six players next year. At some point, you need to start. That's not going to be – that boom or bust cycle of recruiting is not going to be ultimately healthy. So you got to start balancing the classes somewhere.
Yeah, like as it is now, he has three guys coming in for next year, and Elliott would be the fourth.
Oh, yeah,
I guess you could say Froehling would technically be a fifth if you want to.
I count Froehling in that count. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because he would be a new face as well. Then Sakar comes back from his redshirt year. So team will definitely look a lot different next year. But so that's just a recruiting note to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. So probably won't expect a commitment certainly anytime soon, because I would be surprised if he committed before his scheduled official visit. And I would guess if Michigan State is offered, he might have a official visit to Michigan State before he makes his final decision.
Well, and he's from Michigan. He could probably even take an unofficial visit without paying for it.
He's probably maybe already taken a few unofficial visits.
Right.
So keep an eye on Greg Elliott out of Detroit, another guy Wojo is after. So that's about going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. Before we get out of here, Phil, fact or alternative fact, Marquette is getting two wins this week.
That is a super fact.
Gosh, I hope it's a fact.
Otherwise, this is going to be the most depressing podcast ever.
Yeah, that would be a fact for next week if Marquette drops either of these next two games. Hey, like I said, I'm confident. The Providence loss was a hiccup. I don't think it's the end of the road by any stretch of the imagination. As Marquette currently stands, they're a tournament team, according to Joe Lunardi and others. Just kind of hold serve this week. Beat two teams you're supposed to beat, and then things get a little bit tougher after that with Butler, Georgetown, Xavier all coming up after that. So hold serve this week and hopefully two W's.
Absolutely. I'm all for it.
As always, thank you guys for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. You can hit us up on the team handle, Crack Sidewalks. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcasts. Rate us and review us on iTunes. And also, you can like us on Facebook. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post them as well. Phil, talk to you next week. Let's get two W's.
Yep, let's not make it difficult. Just win big.
Just hold serve. Seashells and balloons, everyone.